That's Clifford Brown with the Max Roach Quintet with a lovely little tune called Sandu from the Study and Brown album released in 1955. Clifford Brown, of course, on trumpet, Harold Bland on tenor sax, Richie Powell on piano, George Morrow on double bass, and the great Max Roach on drums. Clifford Brown was born in Wilmington, Delaware, and did not have, tragically, a long career, not at all. In fact, he died in a car crash on June the 26th, 1956, in Bedford, Pennsylvania, but he left behind only 4 years of recordings, and this one, like Sandu, they're all jewels. So we remember him today, and for his wonderful music. He was only 25 years old when he died. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Tuesday, September the 30th. And are we having a war or we don't have a war? What is it? The president shocked the nation and the world when he said at the White House, a news conference on August the 28th, that he had no strategy yet, he said, for dealing with the rise of the Islamic State in the Middle East. And this, of course, we know now that this shocking announcement came despite more than a year of high-level reports and briefings on the jihadists and their terrorism, and from more than enough pressure, I would say, on the inside since 2008 to respond appropriately. And then, miraculously, on the eve of the anniversary of the September 11th attacks on the United States by al-Qaeda, the president authorized, he said, an aerial airstrikes, aerial attacks on Islamic State strongholds in Iraq and in Syria. In other words, he declared war. Well, what do you know? Right after that, John Kerry, the Secretary of State, says, no, it's really not a war as such, per se. It looks like a war, but it really isn't. It is not. And then right after that, the president came back and said, no, I wasn't kidding. I did not stutter. It is a war. We are at war with ISIS. Well, so it's war, isn't it? Well, yes and no, and not really, but sort of, and maybe not even legally, but it's kind of sort of maybe a war. Meanwhile, the president has gone on to recruit a coalition. So now we have more than just U.S. at war. We have U.S. and friends at war with ISIS. And not just with ISIS or with the Islamic State, or ISIL, as the president insists on calling them. But this involves having to penetrate the sovereignty, the airspace, and the country, and in fact direct the bombing in two countries that have not declared war against the United States, namely Iraq and Syria. And why? Because it's necessary, because that's where the Islamic State have just holed up. They commandeered a large swath of land in both countries, joining them. And so this is their state, quote-unquote state, and they are holed up there. That's their base of operations. So to get to them, we by necessity have to kind of sort of drop bombs in Iraq and Syria, the president says. Well then, so there's a war, right? Well, Congress is saying we did not authorize a war. what we did was that we voted for a budget. We voted a budget to fulfill the president's request of an element or an aspect of the military action in that region, and that is the training of moderate rebels in the region, most notably in Syria. See, part of the president's not war is to recruit or to further recruit, because they are already operating with U.S. help, a covert action in Syria in particular among moderate rebels. And they're moderate because, you see, unlike the Islamic State jihadists, they don't want to kill everybody, really, who isn't the right kind of Muslim. What they want to do is they just want to kill the president and his family and his advisors and people who are sympathetic toward him and people who may be Alawites, like the president is. But those, they will limit the killing just to them. They're not really going to be, you know, just wholesale killing people. They want to kill a select group of people. And these are the moderates that the president wants to give weapons to and fund and train, not to kill Assad, mind you. That's not the intent here. The intent is to give them the weapons so that they can fight the Islamic State people who are occupying their country, a portion of their country. Now, if there's no control, who knows what else they may do with these weapons, but we have no control over that. We consider them moderates because we're clear they want to kill the same people we want to kill. So we could work with them. And we want to give them guns, and we want to give them whatever weapons they would need to achieve that objective. And, of course, we will be working with them in conjunction with our plan. This is the president's explanation. Our plan to deal with the Islamic State. They will join us in our fight. See how it all works out? And an unintended benefit might be the assassination of Bashar al-Assad and his entire regime, and deposing the regime and putting somebody that we like. But these are moderates. And that's what we want to do. And yes, that is an aspect of the war, but it's really not a war. And we know it's not a war because the president went on the television on Sunday, on 60 Minutes, he was telling Steve Croft, the correspondent for 60 Minutes, that no, it's not a war. It's not a war against ISIL, he says. It is not about America against ISIL. You see, this is his explanation. You see, there is a bloody civil war going on in Syria, and it is causing a lot of trouble, a lot of killing, unnecessary killing. And we know that the Assad regime has been committing atrocities, and people associated with the regime are let loose to commit atrocities. And now, with the Islamic State occupying a portion of Syria, it is compounding the thing now, because the civil war had its own madness, and now ISIL or the Islamic State, they're there, and it is making matters just unbelievably horrible. And it, from our estimation, this is the president's explanation, from our estimation, Bashar al-Assad is unable or unwilling to contain the problem and deal with it and solve it. So we're just intervening to help the beleaguered people, the people who are under the thumbs of all these crazy things that are going on. We are there to help them. That's the latest explanation. But it's not a war. Don't call it a war, because, yes, I know I said it was a war on the 10th, and I was clear about it, and I even corrected John Kerry, who said it's not a war. But now the president is saying on Sunday, well, it's really not a war. And it certainly it's not a war against ISIL. It's really an intervention in behalf of the people who suffer so badly and have been suffering so much as a result of this untenable civil war occurring in Syria. Well, so is it a war? Is it not a war? Well, the members of the coalition seem to think it's a war because they rustled up their military, and they would not have done so had they not been clear that they're involved in military action. And when you're involved in military action, it's a war. It tends to be that way. And then the president, I mean, stunningly admits in the same interview with Steve Croft that, yes, part of the plan is actually the overthrow of Assad. So you can imagine how this all looks to people with a logical mind around the world, in the United States and around the world. What the hell is going on here? And we have lie on top of lie on top of lie, and deception and parsing of words. Is it a war? No, it's, well, it's an intervention. It is, you know, something. The president said something. I had to write it down. It was just so unbelievably stupid. It just, there's no other word for it. He described it as not being a permanent war footing. What is that? It is not a permanent war footing. That's how he explained it. It's not a war. And it is not a permanent war footing. Well, people are looking to Congress now to say, well, look, we clearly have some demented minds in charge of our nation here. We just can't seem to define what exactly the status is of the United States in Iraq and in Syria. What is it that the country is doing in these two sovereign nations, allegedly in pursuit of a non-state known as the Islamic State? What is happening here? What do we call this? But here, too, Congress is playing games. You see, Congress has said, look, the president went ahead and he unilaterally declared war. It happens for political reasons. Of course, we agree that the Islamic State ought to be confronted. And so we kind of gave the president a sort of a backup on that with a vote that authorized a budget, which, by the way, is way past, it's almost $800 million now and counting since the airstrikes began. So they're saying, we did our part. We voted to authorize a budget, but we haven't authorized a war. The president is saying, well, I don't need your authorization. I am the commander-in-chief, and under my authority, I have the power unilaterally to decide to declare war. And one of the provisions is, we are in imminent danger. Okay. But the president himself is indicating that we are not in imminent danger. He just said on Sunday that the intervention, as he called it, the not permanent war footing in Iraq and in Syria, is about basically responding to a civil war in a country which did not invite our participation. It did not ask for U.S. involvement. It did not petition the United States to take it upon itself to intervene. And the United Nations has yet to discuss this matter officially under the terms of international treaties that apply in situations like this. But back to Congress and how they're playing games with us too. So the Congress is saying, we took the vote, we gave the president the backing that he desired to have the budget to fund the overthrow of the Assad regime via the training, via this ruse that the money will go to train the moderate rebels so as to help the United States in its eventual but yet not legal war against the Islamic State. Now, they took off from Congress after that vote because now the elections in November are the main attraction. They have to take care of their individual campaigns, and things are looking a little bit dicey all around for both Republicans and Democrats because the public is just fed up of the lies and the inaction and the contempt that this entire government has for the people. And they're just opting out, and people are concerned on both sides what the reaction of the public will be. So they're making this last-ditch effort to excite a very unexcited electorate. So they take off, and they go on their November break. They're not going to be back until November. So they do the vote. They gave the president this seeming backing via this budget that they approved, and then they take off. They take off on the 17th after they passed a resolution. They take off, and the president begins the war on the 22nd of September while they're not there in Congress. You see how it works. They're not there while the cat's away, the mice will play kind of thing. They did their resolution vote, and they're gone now. They are dealing with election and re-election in some cases. And the campaign is stepped up on the 22nd, and we now have a new wave of airstrikes occurring in their absence. But although people say, well, reconvene Congress, this is a matter of urgency. Boehner, the House Speaker, who is the key point person on this vote, or if it were to be held, this vote, he says, I will consider calling people back on this matter because, after all, the president doesn't have the right to declare war without the consent, the advice and consent of Congress. And this is a very grave matter, so grave that it hasn't happened yet. And they will take their time before this vote is even taken. And why? Because it is in their interest to watch Obama self-destruct and squirm as the rising tide of questions begins to inundate him. And, of course, he's not doing too much to help himself with these silly contradictions within his own cabinet and within his own circle. They all seem not to be operating on the same page at all. So Boehner is holding back. He is not going to demand that members of Congress come back unless something dramatic happens. So he's holding out. The members of Congress themselves are not too unhappy about it. They're talking like, well, this is a constitutional crisis that we're having. Well, they're not acting like it's a constitutional crisis, but they're saying it is a constitutional crisis. But they really don't want the responsibility of the vote, not at election time. Nobody wants to be on the books voting for war, even though they will say, well, it's time, and we need to confront ISIS, and we condemn terrorism, making all the appropriate pratings that they're engaging in. But when it comes to the actual vote, it is not in their interests to be associated with a vote that is so contentious. And it is contentious because the president himself has muddled things. He has muddied the waters with this reckless act of deciding that, and he said it, if I have to go it alone, I will. You know, I have the authority unilaterally to do these things. They're not going to take on this right now, because the president is doing a great job at self-destructing. So it leaves the people once again at the mercy of idiotic policymaking. And this is as great a danger, if anything, to the American people as is terrorism itself. It's a different form of terrorism. Inaction and the unwillingness to be clear about what we are doing and our objectives. There is no clarity here at all, anywhere to be found. And yet, the country technically is committed to war. It has been engaging in war. You may recall we had this discussion with the professor from Vanderbilt University, Mike Newton, and he talked about the huge legal questions that exist here. And he ought to know that he's considered one of the leading experts in the country on this matter of international law and law of war. The country is now legally liable as a country engaging in acts of war. And the country also has incurred even greater wrath from the same terrorists that it is supposedly fighting. They have vowed to step up, to ramp up their attacks on the United States and all of its so-called cohorts in the military assault on their strongholds. So here we are. Is it a war? We don't know. Even the president who declared war is now saying he's not sure. He has no idea whether we're at war or not. And he's not clear either about who the enemy is. The enemy started out being the Islamic State. Now the enemy is, you know, the civil war. We were the initiator of aggression because we penetrated the airspace of two sovereign nations in pursuit of the enemy. You know, pretty much like the law enforcement concept of hot pursuit. You know, when police are said to be in hot pursuit of a suspect, they get to throw out all of the other constitutional protections that would normally apply, you know, like a warrant and things like that. They can actually chase you into your house and kill you. It's pretty much what happened to Amadou Diallo. He was supposedly in hot pursuit of a suspect. And over Molly Graham in the Bronx, hot pursuit of a suspect, which entitles them to break down his door and to corner him in his bathroom and execute him there without a warrant even. See? So this is the kind of war that this president is prosecuting. And yet we have no clarity to this day as to what exactly this country is doing in Iraq and in Syria, or even against ISIS itself, the Islamic State. What is it that this country is doing? And who is going to compel a cogent response and an explanation? Who is demanding it? Nobody. Everybody is in charge and nobody's in charge at the same time. We're at war, but we're not. we're attacking the enemy, but it's really a different enemy now. As of Sunday, the president says, the enemy isn't really the Islamic State after all. The enemy is, you know, world order and the humanitarian need to intervene in a situation in a civil war that has people suffering for so way too long. And Bashar Assad just isn't moving fast enough, not for our liking anyway. So we're doing this to accelerate things. And this is flying. And people are off to, you know, doing their campaign thing. There seems to be no particular sense of urgency about anything. The situation remains very much status quo. We will get reports from a compliant media every day. We will hear about the number of sorties made or the number of airstrikes made. And there will be stunning visuals of things being blown up and the newest fighter planes strafing the sky. And we'll get reports about mass movements of people, because wars tend to do things like that. It's now up to more than 2 million people being displaced. And we'll get these kinds of stories. We're not getting the story about what exactly is the status of the United States with respect to war, because we are at war. And all things apply. When a country commits to war, when a country declares war, it is not a one-sided issue. I raised this question with Professor Newton. Why would it be assumed that, well, you know, we declared war, but, you know, we're doing something else now? No, you can't. This is not a thing you can just undo. When you declare war, it's full commitment, and not just by you. Other interested parties adjust to suit. Because technically, while things are going on, other countries are saying, well, we are expecting at some point to be obliterated. Do we take defensive action? Do we take preemptive action? Do we go crazy and just drop bombs on America and just whatever it is we have to do, in as much as they're coming for us? Do we take a position that we're taking some of them with us too? Yeah, you have all these things in play. These things are not off the table. They're not just disappearing. These are options that still apply. So when the President of the United States commits the entire nation to war, he commits the entire nation also to being open to attack. Nobody seems to understand that. And you have, you know, a sense of, you know, well, we'll get to it when we can. Elections are important, and they're off on their various jaunts to drum up votes. Meanwhile, there may very well be people planning all kinds of things to attack the United States, because war has been declared as of September the 10th. We are in a state of war. You don't get to undo it. You don't get to kind of push it to the side as if, well, I said that last week, but this week, you know, I really don't mean it. There has been no recall vote on the war. There has been no official retraction from what the president had said on September the 10th, declaring war, and then backing it up with the commensurate action of bombing two different countries that have had no role in this, in terms of saying, well, we have attacked the United States. Syria has not attacked the United States. Iraq hasn't attacked the United States. But they have been attacked. They have been attacked. So the United States not only declared war, it conducted war against two sovereign nations already. Do we really believe that the United States is safe and immune from attack after it has been the aggressor like this? And is this the way that we conduct business? Is this the way that it should work? That the president goes off on his jaunt and the systems of checks and balances also decides that, well, look, let him stew in his own juice. As if to say they minimize or don't even consider the fact, the gravity of the situation, and that it calls for a very different kind of reaction. It calls for a serious challenge to this thing and to set things right. But life goes on. And life goes on because, again, in the arrogance of the United States, it takes the position psychologically and it tells the people psychologically, nothing can happen to you. There's going to be no consequence to our irresponsible action. Why? Because everybody understands, even if we're wrong, we're still strong. And we could be wrong and strong and blow you to bits, even if you were to take action as wrong as we are. What a thing. And it is happening before our very eyes. And do we see the kind of reaction? This should be causing panic all throughout the United States. People should be very worried about this kind of behavior. They should be very concerned that every American literally is at risk because of the recklessness of the people who are elected to act responsibly. And they're being deliberately reckless. And all of us are in danger as a result of it. I'll pause here, take a break, come back to your thoughts at 888-874-4888 right after this little interlude. Listening to PRN.FM, and you're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. What are your thoughts? 888-874-4888. Do you understand that we are at war? Does it concern you that life goes on as usual, despite the fact that we are technically all vulnerable to attack by nations or by interested parties who believe that they have reason to take preemptive action in as much as the United States has not only declared war, but has basically followed up on that declaration with acts of war. 888-874-4888. And of course, you know, it gives a picture about what is wrong with this Obama administration, that we have people doing whatever it is they want to do, and it doesn't matter. Chicago, Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, you treat?
Fine, thank you. What are your
all
thoughts?
Right. I'm listening to it because here's the thing, and this goes down to fundamentally the way people can circumvent the law. You know, with the War Powers Resolution, this basically clouded a lot of what, you know, the original Constitution said about, you know, declaring war on, you know, on a nation. And obviously ISIS, I guess they're a sovereign nation. They took some land, so. But I think this goes to the point of corporations and corrupt politicians being able to do whatever they want to do on auspice of, you know, following the law. Unfortunately, you know, this has been happening since, you know, like I said, the War Powers Act. And the problem is that traditional war, like, you know, like people saw in World War II, that's never going to happen again. That traditional, you know, we're going to declare war, Congress is going to declare war, that's not going to happen again because of the fact that you have to do too many things that would probably catch the eye of the UN. And there's, you know, there will probably be a lot of human rights violations because, you know, you read up on, you know, stuff like World War II and how they rounded up a lot of, you know, Japanese into concentration camps, you know, stuff like that. If that happens now, you know, that's a human rights violation. So I think the U.S. is not looking to, you know, immediately declare war because of the fact that there's just too many things that you can't do right now.
But the point, Henry, is that the United States has declared war. That's what the news conference, the 14-minute statement that the president made on September the 10th, was to inform the nation that airstrikes will begin and that the United States is officially at war. That's what that was about. He declared it.
So
and what the point I'm making is when a head of state declares war, it is war against every citizen of that country. You and I are now technically at war. And this is the thing that is so frightening, that the people are so calm because they just don't see it. They think it's, you know, something Congress did or something the president did. No, it is something that puts all of us on the line. We all are technically at war when the president declares war.
Yeah, well, I was just going by the basis of what the Constitution said.
You know, the Constitution is about the process that relates to how the president is a system of checks and balances, really, about checking the power and authority of the president. And in matters of this nature, this grave nature, the idea is that the elected representatives of the people, expressing the will of the people, will be able to keep check on the president. They're having this, the lawyers, as lawyers would do, they're having the fine print argument about whether the president has power and authority to act alone in this decision. That is aside the point, as I see it. The point, just the same, is whether he does it alone or does it with the consent of Congress, which Congress is likely to approve if because of, you know, there's this sense of patriotism and all of that. War, when declared, puts every citizen on the line, the safety of the entire country. And when that happens, the assumption is that the citizens can be and are adequately protected. We had a guy get all the way into the White House the other day. Into the White House, okay, where the president and his family live. And he was well into the White House, an armed man. So what does that say about the safety of the average person out here? And
yeah,
what is the responsibility of the president and all of the members of Congress in the Senate and the House to assure the valid actions of the president and in the interests of the country? That's the thing that's very scary. Thanks for your call, Henry. Thanks so much for your call today.
Thanks.
From Los Angeles, DX, you're on the air.
Hello, Yutrees. How are
Hello.
You today?
Fine, thank you. How are you today?
Good. I'm doing fine. Hello to everyone that's listening at the time as well. On time. I'm going to have to disagree with you on a couple of points.
Okay, great.
I think that the reason why the president comes up and says we're at war and declares war and then comes back several days later and says, well, no, we don't consider this war. It's because he himself doesn't know if we're at war or not. He has no clue. And let me explain. The whole process of governing has been sold out in this country. Because there's a whole shadow government, and I don't say that in a conspiratorial type of way. I'm saying that the people we think are running this are not running this. So you are kind of right about one hand not talking to the other type of thing. The generals are who's controlling this aspect of governing right here, this war making. They're in control of this, and the president there, is just they just leave him out dangling on a limb all the time. We see it all the time. It's because he doesn't really know what's going on. He's just a figurehead. And I have to disagree with you on the point that we're any more in any more danger than we were 2 months ago or 2 years ago or even 15 or 20 years ago, because you kind of bought into a little bit of the fear mongering that they're putting out there. And that's the reason why I just turned my cable off and my DirecTV off, because they get you all worked up on this stuff.
Well, I'm saying we're making a case here of studying what happens when war is declared in a country. And it's not about inculcating a sense of fear. It just is the reality. When you are at war, when a country is at war, it is not a normal time for the country, no matter whether it is legally declared or not legally declared. Once it's declared, that's the whole point. When war is declared by a country, the entire country no longer can operate as if things are normal.
Well, my point is, we've been at constant war pretty much for 20 years or so. Well, actually, ever since basically World War II. And this is nothing new, is what I'm saying. There's no new. What the last thing I was going to say is that they're controlling, whoever's controlling this chessboard thinks they're in control of all sides, and they may not be completely in control of all sides. Mm-hmm. But I even think that they're even in cooperation with Assad in a way, in some kind of way, or there's some talking going back and forth. And they're in control of ISIS, obviously. Come on. And then now.
Well, I agree with. I'm not disagreeing with anything you say. In fact, I do agree.
My point is that they think they're in control of all sides, and this is why there's here on their part, because they're not going to get excited about something where they think they control all aspects of it, and anything that goes down, they control it anyway. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, but I'm talking, that's their thinking. I'm raising the question about our thinking. Mm-hmm. Our thinking should be, this is unacceptable. This is not
right.
Our rights.
Well,
our rights are not supposed to be so easily dismissed, and our safety and our concerns. These things are not, because both Congress, I just pointed that out in this talk today. Congress and the president, everybody is basically ignoring the people. They're playing games among themselves, you know, a chess game. I make this move, you make that move. And it is a game. The problem is when a reaction should come on the basis of people taking very seriously when a head of state declares war. Remember when the United States took very seriously, one guy, Osama bin Laden, the entire country went to war against one individual. Okay.
Yeah.
So it basically said, we're taking you so seriously. That may be the reaction on the flip side of the coin. There may be people or countries in this world that when the United States says we are going to war against you, they take that very seriously and they will act accordingly. Now, where does that leave the famous we the people? Where does that leave us? in this contest that is going on between the generals and the corporations and the president and Congress and all these parties vying for dominance, and the people are the ones who ultimately will bear the brunt, both in terms of going to fight and as well as in terms of what the possible repercussions can be and already are.
And I guess my point, Eutrice, was that nothing's changed. What's changed? I mean, it's the same thing, actually. We keep going through the same thing, and all they really want from the people, like he said the other day, from the Black Caucus, you know, we need you to vote. All they want.
That's it.
That's it.
Thank you for your call today. Thanks so much. From New York, Ali, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. What are your thoughts today?
Yeah, my thought on this, you're talking about we the people. We, people of color, we don't count because every 20 years the civil rights has to be renewed for us to go out and vote and have some rights. So, you know, when they don't, you know, we are not even being considered. But this is what I wanted to say about the subject. Would you ask Samantha Powell and Susan Rice if we are in a war or not? Because those two ladies, when you hear these two ladies speaking at the UN, I mean, I think Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld, I don't think they sounded as strong as those two ladies. And when we get Hillary Clinton as the president, we're going to have a trifecta. We should have Hillary as the president, Samantha Powell as the Secretary of State, and Susan Rice and as Rumsfeld. That's what we should have the next time. Because when we hear these three ladies talking about war and attacking others, they don't have humanity in either the three of them, neither one of the three. So we should ask those two ladies if we are in a war. And it doesn't matter what they call it, a war or not, if we had declared a war or not. And if you get a constitutional a right to declare a war. Because the fact is, when we went into Afghanistan and we invaded those countries, it was an invasion and it was called a war. And this is, it's just amazing how this president was asking African Americans to go out and vote. It's even here in New York, the way that people went and voted for Cuomo. It's just like amazing how people they go out there thinking that their voice is really, really being heard. It's another big lie that people are not getting, and it's a very sad story. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your call. And this is the concern. We should have evolved to the point where, I mean, DX mentioned this has been going on. Well, this is also a point to confront the people. Simply because it's been going on, does it mean that it should continue? Joel from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice. How are you today?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'd like to continue along the vein that the last caller was talking about. And because I was thinking about these three dowagers of death that she was referring to. She forgot the woman who calls herself Victoria Nuland, nay, Victoria Noodleman. You know, I think all three of them represent the kind of neoconservative excess that is driving this policy. You know, Samantha Power wrote a book called Humanitarian Imperialism. I don't know if you've read it. I read parts of it. Humanitarian intervention. It really should be called Humanitarian Imperialism. And it seems to me that these three women, especially Nuland, have kept alive the doctrine that began in the Bush administration, the second Bush administration, which is to attack seven countries in the Middle East, destabilize their governments, possibly overthrow them all, bring in compliant puppet states, and then allow the United States to control the distribution, where it goes, distribution of petrol, and also the amount that is being produced. And this policy has never really been thwarted. It's never really been rejected. It continues to this very day. So in a way, I kind of expected this And that is why the United States trained this jihadist force in Jordan, along the Jordan-Syrian frontier, and in Turkey, very similar to what they did with al-Qaeda when they trained al-Qaeda. And after they were finished in Afghanistan, they went into Montenegro, they went into Bosnia, they went into Kosovo. So this is part of the concerted strategy to really own the world. I'm not surprised that any of this has happened. It's going to be as catastrophic as the last interventions. It's a kind of reflection of mental illness. I mean, there's one definition of mental illness which says that keep trying what you fail to do because maybe ultimately it will succeed. So the situation is dire, and we have unintended consequences that are facing us at home of unbelievable significance. You know, say half the country in drought, and the economy moving towards some kind of collapse, and yet they continue doing these things. So that's what I think is going on. And I think, once again, because I've said this on this program before, it's up to us to act. We cannot depend upon the two corporate parties in Congress. They are ossified, they are comatose, they are moribund. And it is up to us to meet our responsibilities as citizens and figure out what to do. Maybe some other time we can talk about what we have to do, because we have to do something.
Thank you so much for your call.
Okay.
That brings us to the end of our program today. I want to thank you for your very, very astute observations and contributing to the program. That's what makes the program. Stay tuned. Coming up next, The Infectious Myth with David Crow. Reach me at leadstories@gmail.com or on Facebook, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. I am so delighted always to meet you here on PRN at 1 o'clock every day, Monday through Friday, and to engage in these kinds of conversations. This is really the kind of conversation that America ought to be having. What is it? I mean, the apathy in government and the contempt for the people's rights. They're playing their games, but it is the people who are suffering on all these various levels, and that's the whole point here. Parsing words and playing games with, well, what is the meaning of this and the semantics of that? And what could we get away with? How could we lie to people and jeopardize their futures at the same time? I hope this program caused reflection on these questions about the role of government at this time, the role of the president and Congress, and certainly, as Joel just said, what are we to do about it? That's the discussion that you ought to be having with yourselves from today on, at least. So thank you so much for joining me. Let's meet again tomorrow for some other good programs coming your way. Take care. A pleasure and a privilege to be in your esteemed company.
This is Eutrice Lead, host of Lead Stories. I'm proud to be part of the PRN family's hosts and the work that we do, promoting progressive ideas for inquiring minds. For the past 12 years, PRN has been advertisement-free and has never held a fundraiser. But the time has come to ask for your support. Won't you be a friend of PRN and commit to a monthly recurring donation of $20 or $50 or $75 or $100? This will help PRN continue its good work, bringing you the latest breaking stories and the best topics reported and discussed from a progressive point of view. Just go to PRN's homepage and click on the subscribe button. With each subscription, you will receive a free DVD from the Gary Null Library. Thank you for your support.